Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
And think about this. We're gonna go off air at 2 o'clock tomorrow. It's gonna be two games by the time we come back on air on Monday. We'll know.
And the full draft will be over.
Preds could be up 2-0, down. I mean, it's just amazing all the possibilities that are gonna happen over the weekend that we're gonna be discussing on Monday. Monday's gonna be a huge show with everything going on with the Preds and with the draft over the weekend. I know Paul's excited about it.
I don't like all this anticipation, so I'm eager to know these six picks or however many, and to have a game to watch and discuss. I have two games to watch and discuss.
So Josina Anderson of ESPN with the report about 20 minutes ago that said, barring some last-minute change of heart and some unforeseen news coming out of Cleveland, they are going to take Baker Mayfield number one overall this evening in the NFL draft. Warren Sharp with SharpFootballStats.com. You can follow him on Twitter at SharpFootball. And he's been nice enough to join us here and there on the show, and always great analysis when it comes to the numbers. Warren, great to hear from you, man. How are you?
I am doing great today. It's like, I think this is going to be the best day on the NFL calendar since that Super Bowl night, and probably again until we get to week one. So I'm really excited for tonight.
Before we get to some Titans discussion with you with the numbers, let's take a look at Baker Mayfield and specifically Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. How difficult does Riley make it on you when you try to compare his numbers to any of the other quarterbacks in this draft?
It's just extremely difficult. I think that he is just such a creative and inventive offensive mind that he has a big edge over, especially a lot of the caliber of the defensive coordinators that he faces on a routine basis. You know, there's some really talented defensive coordinators that he faces, like from Georgia, from time to time last season. But for the most part, they're going up against guys that are just severely outmatched. So it's difficult, in my opinion. Like, I don't like just discounting a quarterback because of his size. I think that if you can play, you can play. I mean, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, those guys have proved it in the modern football. It doesn't matter about your height. But the issue for me is that you can't just compare stats across all these guys and say, well, Baker Mayfield has the best completion percentage and he's best when he's under pressure and all these different things, and expect that that is necessarily going to hold true when he gets to the NFL because of the edges and advantages and the environmental factors that were in his favor when he played for Oklahoma. Now, it's not to discount Baker Mayfield. I'm not saying he's a poor prospect. I'm not saying he shouldn't go number one overall. He's certainly been he's had a very strong senior year that was able to get him to this point, because last year before the draft, nobody was thinking that he was going to be a pick that was going to be here in the first round. Now we're talking about a number one overall, but I just think a lot of that does relate to Lincoln Riley and the edges that he gave Baker Mayfield in his career down at Oklahoma.
Warren, let's say that Baker Mayfield works out and he reaches his full potential as an NFL quarterback. If he reaches that full potential, who's his comp right now in the NFL? Even if it's a combination of a number of different quarterbacks, who is Baker Mayfield right now in the NFL?
Well, it is interesting because I instinctively go back to his size, even though I'm saying I don't care about his size, but his accuracy is akin to Drew Brees, in my opinion, like the career accuracy from a long-term perspective. He's obviously a little bit more mobile in the pocket and a little bit more, he's got far more swagger, so to speak. That's not really an analytical term, but than Drew Brees, who is a very methodical, robotic, just very organized type thinker. Baker Mayfield's a little bit more outside the box type guy, but he's definitely, I mean, from an accuracy perspective, from his ability to work the ball down the field, I think that there are some comparisons, but I mean, I don't necessarily see him, like, Russell Wilson is just really underrated still. Both those guys, Wilson and Breeze, because of his size, really underrated. But Wilson throws just a high percentage of balls deep down the field. And I think Baker Mayfield depends on the offense coordinator, right? Like Todd Haley, we look at if he's going to go number one overall and the quarterbacks that Haley's worked with. I mean, you're not talking about a lot of quarterbacks like a Baker Mayfield. You're talking about Ben Roethlisberger for what, like six seasons, Matt Castle for just a few, and then Kurt Warner for a couple. Those are the quarterbacks that Todd Haley's worked with. I think we're not going to see the maximum Baker Mayfield in Cleveland if he goes there with that coaching staff. They're going to need to bring in a new staff, I think, to really get Baker Mayfield and optimize him, like the way I think that you guys hope that your new staff is going to optimize Marcus this season.
Warren Sharp with SharpFootballStats.com with us on the Midday 180.
What does how Wyoming ran the ball tell you about Josh Allen as an NFL prospect?
Yeah, I don't hear this discussed, so I'm glad you brought it up because this is really fascinating to me. When you look at, you got a struggling team, you got a team that's coming back off of a good year. I say good year. He didn't have great completion percentage, but he did a lot of good things. Very intriguing prospect after his season in 2016. He wants to go to the pros, but his offensive coordinator, Brett Vegan, convinces his dad, calls his dad up, says, no, don't let Josh Allen go to the NFL. Let him come back here for one more year. And what ends up happening is instead of treating him like a quarterback who he believes could be the number one overall quarterback and they're going to utilize him. I mean, you play to the strengths of your players, right? You're going to design an offense around your offensive strengths. So you would think that he would be designing a more pass-oriented offense around Josh Allen, who he convinced to come back to school for one more year before going to the draft. But unlike guys like Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield, Mason Rudolph, and Sam Darnold, whose rushing offenses were from great, such as Oklahoma had with Baker Mayfield, to mediocre, such as Josh Rosen had in UCLA, these guys were being given the ball in their hands more than average. They were asked, their adjusted pass rate was higher than the national average. Josh Allen's adjusted run rate was significantly higher than what the national average is, meaning his adjusted pass rate was much lower. So it's adjusting for like time and situation and score and things of that nature. How often was he passing the football? They were running the ball a lot. Yet the interesting fact is their rushing offense ranked 108 in the country in terms of efficiency. The offense coordinator is complaining after the season's over that Josh Allen was put in all these bad situations where he was in second and long and third and long, and so his completion percentage was lower. But the reason why he was in those situations is because they were running the ball with a 108-ranked rushing offense on early downs too much. And why would an offense coordinator who really buys into Josh Allen run so much with a terrible rushing offense on early downs and force him into these bad situations? So I just think that you can learn a lot by the way that a coach tells you about a prospect based upon how he coaches this guy. He was around Josh Allen for 3 years. He recruited him to Wyoming. He convinced his dad to keep him back, to let him come back for his junior year. Why is he not turning the reins over to this guy? Why are they relying on a run game? Not a good run game, a horrible run game, rather than letting Josh Allen just take the offense over. It could be a sign that the offense coordinator just doesn't quite understand his team, or it could be a sign that he doesn't have full and complete confidence in what Josh Allen is going to be able to do if he did turn the reins over to him.
Warren Sharp with us. And I know you like to say that none of us know the prospect better than the quarterback's coach, the head coach, or the offensive play caller. And we're all always asking those coaches, hey, what do you think about this guy? But you can run the numbers that will sometimes tell us exactly what they think about that player based on how they utilize that player with their play calls. And you're getting to some of that with Josh Allen. Can you look at it the same way with Sam Darnold, for instance? What did you learn when you ran the numbers with him?
Well, Sam Darnold was treated a little bit differently obviously, at USC. Their rushing attack was a bit mediocre, but they actually passed the ball a little bit more than average. Now, Darnold's, like, basically across the board, like, all the scouts and everybody talks about a lot of his upside, and he has that. The main thing that he needs to work on is, I mean, one of the key things is the turnovers, like the pocket presence that he has, whether it's ball control and being aware of the pass rush around him, or it's being more careful with the types of passes that he's throwing. It's from an interception perspective. But I think those are things that a good offensive coordinator can help teach and help coach and help improve. Some of the things that Josh Allen, his struggles with, such as accuracy, those are things that just are very difficult to improve upon significantly, especially with how poor he was in college. So Sam Darnold, I think, I view him as a more complete package now with a lot of tools that could become a great quarterback in the future in the NFL, whereas Josh Allen, I just don't know about his ceiling because I don't think that he can improve on some of these key factors. And I think the coaches at USC, obviously Darnold has a very small body of work overall, but I think the coaches there had a lot more confidence in him to lead them when they needed to, and he actually got it done on some big stages, whereas, you know, that wasn't the case necessarily for Josh Allen.
SharpFootballStats.com is the website. Warren, let's say hypothetically here that the Titans hire you to run some numbers to see what matches up with them based on the analytics of their biggest needs going into this draft. What would you tell them?
Well, one of the things I think that is extremely interesting with the new scheme that you guys are running, with obviously Terry Rubisky leaving and Matt LaFleur coming in, is the affinity that the Rams kind of tree had for 11 personnel. I mean, they went overboard last season with their 11 personnel. When they passed the ball last year, 11 personnel, for people who don't listen, probably you guys have taught them well, but that means three wide receivers, one running back, and one tight end. Those are the 11. The rest are the wide receivers. So you got three wide receivers on the field. When they passed the ball 89% of the time, it came from 11 personnel. That was the highest rate in the league. That's 20% above average. Average is 69%. They were up at 89%. The Titans last season were down at 59%. So it's a 30% jump to 11 personnel. Now, obviously, you guys have strengths and weaknesses, and I think a good offense coordinator is going to take the pieces that he's been dealt, right? Like, if they decide to draft a wide receiver, he's going to try to figure out a way to work him in, and if he doesn't get one, he's going to try to optimize the passing game with the players that he has. So if he doesn't have to go, can't go as much 11 personnel, then he'll find a way to go more 12 or 21. But what they ended up doing was passing the ball a ton. Now, if you ask, how did Marcus Mariota fare last year with 11 personnel? If I tell you that the average in the league was about an 80, I'm just going to round the numbers, 85 passer rating and 6.5 yards per attempt, what do we think Marcus Mariota was from 11 personnel? If the average is 85 and 6.5, the answer is that he was 57.5 passer rating and only 5.1 yards per attempt. He had a 3-13 touchdown to interception ratio when he was passing out of 11 personnel. Now, he was much, much better when he was using 1-2 wide receivers on the field. 8.5 yards per attempt, 11-4 touchdown to interception ratio, 110 rating, and a 49% success rate, which was 11% better than average. So, and the other crazy stat that I was researching, you can find all this stuff up at Shark Football Stats, but one of the other interesting stats was that Marcus Mariota, of all the wide receivers that he passed the ball to out of 11 personnel, the only player that had a positive touchdown to interception ratio was Eric Decker, and he only had one touchdown, no interceptions out of 11. Rishard Matthews, no touchdowns, three interceptions. Corey Davis, no touchdowns, three interceptions. Taylor, no touchdowns, one. And same with Douglas, no touchdowns, one interception. So they're going to obviously need to change and get better at passing out of 11 personnel. And I definitely think that going wide receiver is a position that they're going to need to focus on. I think that the short middle of the field, obviously we know Decker's strengths and weaknesses, right? But that short middle of the field, I think, is going to be a spot that teams need to target a lot this upcoming season, especially with the lowering of the helmet rules and the catch rules, where they relax the catch rules so that you can throw the ball a little bit easier. Guys are going to catch the ball, have more receptions, I think. From that perspective, throwing the ball over that short middle of the field, especially to some of the wide receivers out of 11 personnel, moving a really strong guy into the slot and let him work against a weaker DB, that's going to be a big edge this upcoming year. So I wouldn't mind seeing them go, especially with the new coaching staff, for a new wide receiver.
Warren Sharp bringing the numbers here on the Midday 180. I like it.
Warren, you've talked about better ways to evaluate strength of schedule beyond looking at last year's win-loss records and percentages. What's your assessment of the Titans' schedule based on the metrics that you use?
Yeah, so I definitely like to look at other things besides strength of schedule. And the Tennessee Titans, you guys have an interesting schedule next year when we talk about the odds, especially from like a strength of schedule perspective, utilizing the Las Vegas win totals, which is something that I kind of pioneered a few years back and started working on that. And it's been very predictive in terms of helping analyze which teams are going to have easy schedules. Last year, we saw the Jacksonville Jaguars with the easiest schedule based on my analytics heading into the year. And that allowed Leonard Fournette to have a ton of touches as a rookie because they were doing well in games. Right now, you guys are basically right in the middle of the pack if you talk about your overall strength of schedule. And if you want to, you know, break it down into like bits and pieces and smaller segments, you start off the season at having the, I think it's the 11th most difficult schedule over the first month of the year, and you're more difficult than average in terms of the opponents that you're going to face up through the first 8 weeks of the season. To close out the year, you do have the 13th easiest schedule for the last 8 weeks of the season, and the month of December, you have the fourth easiest schedule. Now, my numbers, when I'm telling you the fourth easiest and that sort of thing, that is going to get modified as more win totals get posted out in Vegas after the draft. A lot of books are waiting till after the draft before they post those, and once these markets start being bet into, like once myself and some of the guys that I work with, we start betting them, other professionals start betting them, these lines will get adjusted and beat into shape a little bit better. So we'll have even smarter, more intelligent numbers about the Titans schedule in terms of strength of schedule point in time. But right now it's I'd say middle of the pack overall, but it definitely ends far easier than it started.
Warren Sharp. At Sharp Football, sharpfootballstats.com is where you can find his great website. Warren, thank you for the insight today. Awesome.
All right, good luck tonight, guys.
All right, Warren Sharp always brings the info. Excellent.
Did he expect them to go a lot more three wide, but Mariota needs to be a lot better in three wide. And how much of that was a function of the way the Titans utilized three wide, almost reluctantly with Malarkey and Rubisky instead of enthusiastically, right?
If they're going more three wide, as he's saying within the numbers, and he also rattled off the wide receiver stats in three wide, not just Mariota, and especially in the red zone, did he just make the case for why they should draft a receiver at 25?
I'm telling you, would not surprise me.
If not at 25, I think, you know, I'm now convinced.
Say one or two.
Top three.
And they have spent a lot of time at wide receiver, not necessarily all of them in the first round, but they have spent time at wide receiver. The names that continue to pop up, like the Gallups and others.
Give me Pettis or Gallup.
Top three-round guys.
Well, and we have no idea what Matt LaFleur thinks about these guys or this roster.
No, that's right.
I mean, you know, he could be meeting with John Robinson saying, Taywan Taylor can't play in my offense.
Yeah, we know he likes the quarterback.
I have no idea what he's seeing on film.
We don't know about any of the weapons. Yeah. We know he likes the quarterback. Otherwise, he doesn't take the job. Right?
That's why it wouldn't surprise me for two reasons. Because it may be a higher priority than we're thinking. But also, those two guys could slip. Or one of those two guys at the top of the board with DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley could slip to 25.
But the reason they're slipping
is because other teams don't value them.
Well, and because first-round receivers have been doing bleh. And Titans had one of them. I mean, he's hurt, but even when he's healthy, he didn't do a heck of a lot.
Greg Cosell joins us Wednesdays here on the Midday 180, and we did ask him recently to go through the wide receiver group we expect to be in the first round, starting with Calvin Ridley.
Well, Ridley is about as smooth and refined as they come for a college receiver. So the biggest question with Calvin Ridley is how he'll be seen, because he weighs 190 pounds and he's thin-framed. So the question is, what is he in people's minds? Bill Polian, who I know well and is a pretty darn smart guy, sees Marvin Harrison in Calvin Ridley. Now, obviously, Marvin Harrison's a Hall of Famer. But Ridley is really smooth. His game is built on finesse, quickness, speed. He's not physical, and he's not about strength. He's lined up all over the formation, so he has that going for him as well. But as I said, he's 190 pounds. Who were some of the other receivers you mentioned
DJ,
there, Jonathan?
DJ Moore.
I really like him. You know, I knew nothing about DJ Moore when I started watching him on tape because, you know, obviously Maryland was not a big-time college football team. But I think Moore has a really desired combination of size. He's deceptively explosive. You know, he's not explosive, you know, in the sense of Ridley or like the Will Fuller types, the guys who are just burners. But he's got really good hands. He lined up all over the formation in Maryland. I think the big question with him, and it's actually a question that an issue that plagued Corey Davis this year as a rookie, the big question will be that transitional quickness and that separation burst. How quickly can he acclimate to the NFL in that regard? You know, I think it took Corey Davis a little bit of time, but he also missed basically the entire offseason program. Hopefully that doesn't happen with DJ Moore.
What about Anthony Miller?
If you watch the matchup show, you'll see that I did a comparison between Anthony Miller's pro day numbers and Antonio Brown's pro day numbers when he came out of Central Michigan. And by the way, Antonio Brown was a sixth round pick, and Miller's are far better than Antonio Brown's. So take that for what it's worth, but I like Anthony Miller as a receiver quite a bit. And, but he's not explosive like DJ Chark.
And where would Cortland Sutton fit in?
I'm not as high on Cortland Sutton as others. I think he's a little bit ungainly in his movement. I think he's a big guy, and you have to take that into account. But I don't think he's really a comfortable player. Ultimately, he'll be a size, strength, ball skills receiver. I wonder if, when all said and done, if Sutton profiles more like a Marquise Colston did for the Saints, you know, as kind of an inside receiver working the middle of the field against linebackers and safeties.
That's Greg Cosell and his thoughts on the wide receivers in tonight's first round. Coming up, we'll give you some details on the broadcast for tonight. We'll preview Predators and Jets. Pierre LeBrun is coming up in about 30 minutes. Looking forward to talking with him from TSN and The Athletic. He's in town in Nashville covering Predators and Jets series, which gets started tomorrow night. Tonight, the NFL Draft. Live, you can come and check it out tonight at Nissan Stadium.
That's right, 6:30 here at Nissan Stadium with a draft party. Parking lots open at 5:30. You got the event going on the East Club level with Mike Keith and 104.5 The Zone broadcasting live. Concessions throughout the concourse. Titans Team Store, where we are right now, will be selling the new uniforms, so check that out. They've got on-field activities, inflatable games, balloon artists, fan photo booths. They've got the zip line. So much going on. Also on the West Side Concourse and club level, an exclusive area for Titan season ticket members with a bunch of fun activities. So parking lots open at 5:30. Fun gets started at 6:30 p.m. here at Nissan Stadium.
If you haven't done it yet, stop into Brentwood Jewelry. See the Salem E Designer line. One-of-a-kind bracelets, rings, necklaces, earrings, all designed by Salem Amamaly. Salem is the master jeweler at Brentwood Jewelry, and for over 50 years, Salem has crafted many jeweled works of art. And now Brentwood Jewelry offers these affordable, original, signed designs to you. Over the last 50 years, Brentwood Jewelry has helped thousands of couples find the perfect rings. They have a large selection of settings and diamonds to choose from. Or if you're looking for a custom ring, they'll design and create that in-store by one of their master craftsmen. Plus, Brentwood Jewelry has a large selection of timepieces for both men and women. If you're in need of fine watch repair, go see Sandy, the watchmaker at Brentwood Jewelry and Gifts. CW21 certified, and his knowledge of vintage and modern watches, it comes from years of experience that are invaluable. Custom engraving, it's great for any occasion. It adds that personal touch. Brentwood Jewelry offers machine and laser engraving, or you can share the rare beauty of hand engraving to make your special memories last for years to come. If you need an appraisal of your ring or other piece of fine jewelry, Brentwood Jewelry has GIA-certified gemologists on staff. They use only GIA appraisal standards. Brentwood Jewelry, exceptional style, exceptional deals every day. Located in the heart of Brentwood on Church Street, you can visit them online, brentwoodjewelry.com.